Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. I'm really excited to bring Clean Cut Meals on as a sponsor of the podcast because I know there's a lot of you listening that have such busy lifestyles and can struggle to prioritize the time to cook nutritious and tasty food. And Clean Cut Meals were the meal prep service I used for the lead up to Marathon de Sable, the 250-kilometer self-sufficient run through the Sahara Desert last month. And a lot of you following my journey on Instagram would have seen them tagged in Instagram stories. So I wanted to bring them on as a sponsor of the podcast because they provided me with so much value, even so much since I've got back because of all my speaking appearances and the different business ventures that I'm in at the minute. I've been struggling myself to prioritize cooking meals, so I've been using them since I've got back because if you're looking to just stay on track and you want the time saved from shopping, prepping, cooking your meals, I just can't recommend them enough. Their food is awesome. I love the taste. They'll fit it to whatever your goals are. So you can check out their website, www.cleancutmeals.ie. You can check the foods on there. You can make your order. And if you have any questions, you can send the guys an email at info@cleancutmeals.ie. So definitely go check them out, www.cleancutmeals.ie. If you're looking for a meal prep service, this is the one I use and I cannot recommend them enough. So I hope you enjoy today's episode brought to you by Clean Cut Meals.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast where we talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be on a topic that I've wanted to cover for quite a while now. There's been quite a frequent trend from people who have read my book, The Fitness Mindset, a couple of previous podcast episodes I've done, and more so some of the recent guest interviews I've done, in particular the guest interview on the Paul and Orla podcast. Paul, who came through my mentorship program, he now lives in Barcelona, working an online personal training business from Barcelona. And before he went, we recorded a podcast episode, which was a very free flow episode, and went down this route of talking about your inner circle, dealing with negative people, dealing with hate, dealing with projection. And it's an area of life that I personally struggled with. And they always say your mess becomes your message. And probably one of the reasons that I feel quite qualified to speak on this topic is that it was something I really struggled with and battled with for a large part of my 20s, dealing with negative people, not recognizing who I needed to cut out, or giving too much weight to words of people who, just because they had a large influence on my life or were in my immediate area, surrounding physical area, I would end up listening to their words. And I love the Chinese proverb that when you lie down with dogs, you get fleas. And it's very, very hard when you're in that situation or around the people that are negative to not take some of their words to heart. So I wanted to do a full podcast episode today on how to deal with negative people. I know it's very, very relative, but nearly all of you listening has someone straight away that probably jumps to mind: your mum, your dad, your brother, your sister, somebody in the workplace, somebody in your gym, somebody in your immediate environment. So I wanted to cover this because it shows up in different ways. Some people's words carry much more weight, and sometimes we let certain people's weight carry a significant amount more and dictate the direction in which we take our lives as a result of trying to live life in accordance with the way that they think it should be. And sometimes it manifests itself in you not living the life that you want. So getting the body composition you want, being in the relationship you want, getting the job you want, whatever it is, it shows up for different ways for different people. So I'm going to free flow a lot of this episode. I have a cup of coffee here beside me, so I'll be sipping in between. And this is one of these take one, go straight through episodes that hopefully I'll be able to provide a lot of value. I'm going to weave in a couple of my own personal experiences, my own stories, and hopefully be able to help anybody that's in that situation, whether it's someone in your immediate circle or you're wondering basically how to discharge or move away from some of the emotional vampires, is what I normally call them, people that drain your energy, those negative people, and hopefully that compound effect over time of being around people who are high energy people or people who support the envision of what you're trying to achieve, whatever that looks like for you, it's completely relative. And I'll speak on some of my best friends in my inner circle who have nothing to do with fitness, nothing to do with business, but who I champion everything they do and they champion everything I do. So hopefully it will help, and some of the personal stories I'll tell will resonate, because again, there's no new problem. It's out there somewhere. It's written down. You just need to find it. So hopefully this episode provides that for you. So the first thing with dealing with negative people is, in my opinion, it's very important to understand who your inner circle of five people are. And I say regularly on the podcast that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And the truth is, you need to understand who those five people are and if they're supporting the inversion of who you're trying to become. Because there's no way that you can surround yourself with five people and not let some of the way that they think dictate your own thoughts, because subconsciously you're going to be taking a lot of that in. It comes back to that Chinese proverb that if you lie down with dogs, you'll get fleas. If you're hanging around with five negative people, you're going to become the sixth. There's been scientific studies shown over and over again. If your best friends, five best friends are millionaires, you're very likely to become the sixth. If your five best friends are overweight, you're very likely going to become the sixth. And you're working in that probability that there's a fine line between being around people who are negative and aren't happy with their life, but are dragging you down as a result of it. So I would ask yourself first, before we move any further with this question, who are your five people? Because you're the average of those five people, whether you know it or not. And I guarantee when you start thinking about the people that you spend the most time with, you're probably that average. If you spend your five friends go to the gym 5 days a week and always eat healthy and go out only on Saturday nights, you're probably the sixth, because that's what we do with social creatures. So the first thing I would ask is, who is your inner circle of five? And are any of those people negative people who are draining your energy? There are three types of people in this world. There are energy chargers, people that you surround yourself with and they give you energy every time you chat to them. Every time you talk to them, you feel more energized after. There are energy drainers, people who you might be having a good day and then you talk with them and your energy levels are actually sapped after talking to them because they're so negative about their life, about their family, about their job, and they're emotional vampires. They're basically feeding off your energy and taking it from you. They're emotional drainers. And then you have neutral people who don't really do either. They don't really charge your battery. They don't really drain your battery. They're just kind of there. It's really important to know the five people you spend the most time with, which one of the kind of person they are. Are they a charger? Are they an energy drainer? Or are they just completely neutral? Because it's not necessarily wrong to have friends that are neutral. I've got some of my closest friends who aren't necessarily emotional chargers or energy chargers. They're just amazingly kind people. They're very, very neutral and just kind of get by in life. And that's the way they live their life. And I love them for it. But I don't have one single energy drainer in my inner circle, because they fucking feed on whatever energy you have. If you're having a good day, and we all have this person, I can think of three people that come to mind straight away. I've got people in my inner circle or in my immediate family inner circle in terms of people that I communicate with on a daily basis or on a weekly basis, who you can be having a great day. You can be full of energy. You may have had the best news and you're just walking on cloud nine, and you talk to this person and they'll knock you down because they're projecting their own insecurities onto you. And the fact that you're walking around with high energy, they feel they need to take you down a peg. There are people out there like that. You need to recognize who they are and make sure they're not in your inner circle of five people. Because if they are, you're going to continuously have this compound effect over time where you're feeling good and this person knocks you down a peg. You need to identify who that is. One of the things I'm going to talk about later on in this episode is dealing with people in your immediate circle who are family members. They might be your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, people that you can't necessarily cut that easily for whatever reason. But if there are people in your inner circle right now who are easily cut, who are energy drainers, we can all think of them because sometimes we have friends who we're just friends with by geography. We grew up with them and we have the sunk cost fallacy of, well, I've been friends with them all my life since primary school. You're a fucking completely different person now to who you were when you were fucking 8 years old. You don't need to be best friends with people just because you grew up with them and you've known them for the last 10, 15 years. Now, by all means, it's amazing to have old friends, and there's something about a bond with an old friend that just cannot be broken and it's always there. But it doesn't mean you have to spend all your time with them. If they hate their life and they're projecting their insecurities onto you and they're taking you down a peg because you're trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve, you need to make sure that you are not making those choices out of geography. You're not making those choices out of sunk cost fallacy. The sunk cost fallacy is the economics term of throwing good money after bad. It's when you dedicate yourself to something because you've put so much time or effort into it. It's the equivalent of if you've done a 4-year degree and you feel, well, I have to work in this space because I've done a 4-year degree in it. I've wasted all this time. If I don't work in this space, it's a waste of time. It's the, I've been in a relationship for the last 5 years, even though we're miserable and we can't even stand the sight of one another. We've been going out for so long, we need to stick together. That's sunk cost fallacy. That's making decisions off what you've done, making decisions today off the back of what you've done in the past, realizing that it's actually ludicrous because it has no reflection or no indication on what you're doing in the future. You can use it as a feedback, and if it's not working, on a feedback of what not to do next time. But what you've done in the past doesn't need to be what you do today, and it definitely doesn't need to be what you do in the future. So it's really important to understand that you're not making friendships and spending your time with your inner circle of people just because they are one of those people that you grew up with, you've been with so long. If I had a euro for every time I had a story with someone that they're like, oh, I've got a great circle of friends, but I've got this one friend who's really negative, cut that one fucking friend. Now, when I say cut them, you don't have to message them and be like, we're not friends anymore, but spend less time with them. If you're spending 60% of your week or 60% of your day with that person and they're bringing you down, that's what's going to happen to you. You're going to be that dog that gets fleas. We are wired as a species to be programmed. If you don't program your mind will be programmed, and you're going to take in the thoughts and you're going to see the world in the way that the average of your five people do. That's the way the world works. It's probably not a coincidence that I've been able to, and I'll use myself because you're your own best example. It's not a coincidence that I've been able to scale up in terms of success in areas of my life. And success is subjective to each person. Find what success means for you. Success for me is never having to worry about paying bills. It's being able to serve people on a larger scale. It's being able to spend time with my mom, spend time with my daughter. That's what success means for me. The reason I've been able to scale up my life in terms of success is the average of the five people I'm spending the time with. I'm spending my time with people who value things that are valuable. Value the valuables and control the controllables. If you can get those two things right, and you know what they are, and you know what's valuable to you, your relationships. For me, it's my inner circle, my five closest people, my friends, my mom, my daughter, serving people on a larger scale, never having to worry about paying my bills or paying rent or paying my mortgage, never having to worry about these scarcity mindsets that I've had to spend a lot of work on over the past several years trying to rewire the conditions that I was brought up with and the way that I was brought up to believe that the world is, even though you're normally hardwired from the way you were brought up and the people that you're in your immediate environment, they normally hardwire the way that you think. That's the exact same equivalent of being around your five people, because their thoughts become your thoughts. There's a reason that your humor is probably very similar to the five people you spend the most time with. There's a reason that your job or the way that you spend your time is very similar to the five people you spend the most time with, because your thoughts become their thoughts. You can't consciously block out their negativity at all times. So my advice, number one, if you have that friend and somebody pops to mind now, it's John or Mary or Sarah or Dan, it doesn't matter who it is, whoever pops into your head that you're like, they're pretty negative and I'm spending a lot of time around them, spend less time around them. It's nearly as simple as that. And I guarantee if you cut one loser friend and you cut one friend who's negative all the time, that's bringing you down, and you add one positive friend who charges your energy, that compound effect over time, that snowball effect over time is going to have a ridiculously positive impact on your life. So that's the number one thing that I would do, is identify identify the people who are energy chargers, identify the people who are energy drainers, identify those emotional vampires, and then identify the people who are neutral, and make sure that you have a couple of positive energy charging friends in your inner circle, because they're going to move you forward. The next thing, which is a little bit harder to deal with, is when your negative people are somebody that's exceptionally close to you, either by blood or by geography or by environment. It's a little bit harder to get away and cut those people physically. So the example that I regularly use, and I spoke about this on the Paul and Orla podcast, I always use my dad as an example. And I love my dad in the sense that I give a lot of my work ethic and discipline to the way that he brought me up, because he used to pull me out of bed at 7 years old, 8 years old, make me work on the farm for 10 hours a day. And I attribute a lot of my work ethic and discipline to that. So I'm so grateful for it. I'm also super grateful for having a reference point on how I never want to see the world. And he's one of the people that I use, because I regularly speak on the podcast, so apologies if you're a first-time listener, but I regularly speak on the podcast about the impact that my mum had on my life. And my mum has always been my biggest fan. She's always told me and my sister that if we want to clean the street, go clean the street if it makes you happy. And my sister's got a PhD. She works as a lecturer in Northumbria University. She's ridiculously successful, and she's probably the smartest person I know. And she would always tell both of us that I don't care what you do, just be happy in what you're doing, and if you want to clean the street, go do that. And my dad was the opposite. He was the complete opposite. He called me an idiot, called me a fool, thought I was stupid, and called me stupid for leaving teaching and starting a fitness business. And because his reality was that you can't make money, one, doing something you love. Two, you can't make money in a fitness, and it's not a traditional job. You don't get up and go to work from 9 to 5 and then come home and you get your weekly wage. You can't make a living doing that. And one of the things that I struggle with most, that I haven't really previously talked on the podcast, but one of the things I struggled with most was I did value my dad's opinion for a large part of my life. And I think we do, even on a subconscious level. For those of you, whether you're close or not with your parents, you tend to value their opinion, or whoever your father or mother figure is in your life, you tend to value their opinion even on a subconscious level. And for me, for my entire early 20s, I did that because I knew I wanted to be in fitness. I loved training. I loved the gym. I loved working with people directly. I loved helping them get fitter and healthier in any way that I could. I loved working and supporting a lot of GAA players, because it's something I did even in my early 20s, where I would help them with nutrition. And it was something that, because I was told that the world is this way, I believed that the world was this way. And that negativity of, just because I think that this is the way it should be doesn't necessarily mean that it's the reality of how it is. And I really struggled. Even when I made that transition first, and it took me 3 attempts to get my business off the ground, which was reinforcing the idea that I was wrong and that I was stupid and that those people were right. And because it took me 3 attempts, and I've spoken before on the podcast about going broke the third time in London and having to go down the back of my couch to get money for the bus, which was probably one of my biggest emotional lows. Again, hide the first world problems. I still had a roof over my head. I still had food in the cupboard, but I felt like an absolute loser. I was embarrassed. I didn't tell anybody. I had a girlfriend at the time. I didn't tell her. I didn't tell my friends. I was so embarrassed because, again, I had no money. It was the first time ever in my life my bank account had gone to zero completely. And I had to take out a loan to pay my rent that month. And that's when I started to reevaluate things. And I was spending a lot of money on a gym in London. I didn't have enough clients to pay those bills. And a small leak will sink a big ship. And that leak got progressively bigger. And it basically led to me losing all my money. It's one of the reasons that I'm so grateful for it now, because I am exceptionally good at money now. My finances are the best they've ever been. The investments that I've made, the life that I live, the money that I make, I'm in the most fortunate position that I would have never dreamed of, that I'll probably never have to worry about money again. And that came off the back of using that failure as feedback. That was the one point between you and me now, because it's probably the first time I said this in the podcast. That was the first time that I thought, yeah, this is wrong. I'm on the wrong path. My dad is right. Everyone that told me I was an idiot, they're right. I was like, I shouldn't have made this. This is the third time this has happened. And that was the time that I nearly quit. That was the time that was the low, that there was no other point at any stage when I thought I couldn't make this work. That was the point when I thought, I don't think I can make this work. I don't think this is right for me. And the beauty of lying on the floor is there's no way to go but up. And that's what happened. I basically just picked myself back up again. I didn't tell anybody. I went and got money, took out a loan. And that was effectively a reframe on, right, I need to give this one more go. And again, I've told the story in the past about I started taking people in the parks for free and they started charging and it built up my confidence as a trainer again. And how you do anything is how you do everything, because I still use that for a reference point in my life right now when I'm failing. If I've had, you know, 7 bad dates, or I've had, you know, 3 bad business meetings, or I've had 3 bad relationship encounters with people or whatever it is, I use that as a feedback and a reference point for those times when you want to quit. And that's where anchoring those times when you were successful can help you and support you in other areas of your life. And one of the things that I do regularly, and I advise with people that I work with, particularly people in my mentorship programs when I'm working business, is anchor the areas of your life that you're successful in and then just re-challenge it in another area. If you're super fit and healthy and in great shape and look after yourself health-wise, have great energy levels, but you're terrible at business, or you're terrible at relationships, or you're terrible in your job, you were great in one area of your life. Use that as an anchor to show and give your support, that give your table legs of support, that you can be successful and you can be amazing at what you're doing if you channel your energy in a certain way. You've already done it in fitness. You may be an amazing mom or dad. You may be amazing in your job at what you do, but you can't stay on your diet. Use those points where you're successful as anchors and use them as reference points for when you're struggling in the areas that you're trying to achieve right now. That's something that I do on the daily. I did that when I prepared for the Marathon de Sable, when I started running 2 kilometers in August and nearly got sick, and then built up to 10 kilometers, up to 20 kilometers, until I ran 250 kilometers through the Sahara. That's what you do. You use these reference points of when you did have a failure and you picked yourself back up and you were that phoenix out of the fire. You use those reference points in other areas of your life and anchor them, because they're very, very powerful. And I regularly come back to that moment where I went broke, because that was my low. That was the time when I was going to let other people's opinion become my reality, because I did believe them. I believed my dad. I believed the people that were in my life that had told me I was an idiot for making that change. And I believed them at that moment in time. What they had said came true. It nearly became a self-fulfilling prophecy, and what they had said came true. And that was the time that I realized, when I started to get a little bit of traction in that area of my life, when things started to go right and I moved back to Ireland and was able to build up the business and start a podcast, write a best-selling book, build a platform, have a business that helps and serves thousands of people, all these incredible things that I get to have. They're off the back now of using that previous failure as a reference point for, you wanted to give up then, you thought you were a loser then, you're not a loser now. You need to keep moving forward. And it doesn't matter how slowly you go, you put one foot in front of the other and you keep moving forward. Success is persistence in disguise. And one of the really important things that I've done over the last 5 or 6 years is those people who you can't get rid of in a physical sense. It may be your mom, it may be your dad, it may be your brother or your sister or somebody in your workplace you see every day. You can't cut them physically because they're in your immediate surroundings, they're in your environment, but you can give their words less weight. The difference between the me of now and the me of 23 is, and I love my dad. He's, as I said, old school Irish hard ass and gave me amazing discipline and work ethic in my life. But his words mean nothing now. They carry zero weight. His opinion on what I do carries zero weight. Up until the book hit the bestseller list, and when he saw some of the money that I was making, I don't think he ever believed that what I was doing was realistic in terms of you could make a living out of it and impact people. And just because that's their reality, it doesn't have to become your reality. And you're going to have people who will throw their opinion in and they'll let their opinion hang there in the air, and then we'll fucking grab and attach to it and let it dictate the direction of our life. Everything you hear is an opinion. Everything you see is a perspective. And the same on everybody else. Everybody will have an opinion on the things that you do. And yet, I'm going to let you in on a little fucking secret now. They'll have their opinion on it, and then they're going to forget what they fucking said, because that's what people do. They throw their two cents in, they have an opinion on what you're doing, and then we attach to it, and they forget about it, and they go back living their own lives. How many times have you had an opinion on somebody and said something about what somebody was doing, and then you've gone back to focusing on your own stuff that's in your life? Because that's what we do. Yet, when it's a negative comment thrown in our direction, or somebody's telling us that we can't do something, we let those words carry weight, and the people that are around us, that our family or blood or friends or inner circle or people who have an influence or direct impact on the way that we live our lives or in our immediate surroundings on day to day, we let their opinions dictate the direction of our life, even though we know our own internal compass is pointing in a different direction. We know our ladder should be up against another wall, but we don't. We listen to what they're saying, and we don't realize that it was just an opinion of that moment in time, and that every moment is a new moment. But no, we hold on to it. When you can detach yourself from the opinions of other people, you will be significantly happier in everything that you do. I can attest to this as somebody who went through most of my life letting other people's opinion dictate the direction that I took. I listened to family members. I listened to friends. I listened to people tell me that I couldn't do something. Why are you listening to somebody whose places you wouldn't choose switch places with? That is one of the biggest take homes. If you take nothing from this podcast, if somebody is offering you advice on a relationship or advice on a job or advice on a friendship or fitness, and you wouldn't change places with them, why are you taking their advice? This is one of my biggest pet peeves in life. And again, I'm speaking to myself, and you can probably hear the animation in my voice because I'm speaking to my younger self, because this is something that I did regularly. I would ask for everyone's opinion on something that I was doing, and then I would let it cloud my mind and cloud my judgment. And I was taking advice from people who I wouldn't even switch places with. That is one thing, if you can catch, that we do as a society and people. And again, I fucking did it myself, and it pains me to think, but your mess becomes your message. I would ask everybody's opinion on a girl I was seeing. I would ask everybody's opinion on a training program I was doing. I would ask everybody's opinion on what course I should do in college or what job I should get. People who are miserable in their own lives. Why are you asking somebody in a toxic relationship what you should do in your relationship? Why are you asking somebody that's overweight and out of shape what you should do in your fitness or training or nutrition program? Why are you asking someone that hates their life and hates their job what you should do with your career path? If you wouldn't change positions with them, why are you listening to them? So that's what I would offer. And everybody who is in that position where you can't cut them physically, their words need to carry less weight. And that's one of the... Again, I'm speaking to myself here, as it's something that has had such a positive impact on my life, and I wanted to share it, is those people who you can't cut, who are in your immediate surroundings, who are in your inner circle, or in terms of you can't cut them physically because of environmental reasons. You can cut the words that their weight has. So when they throw an opinion at you, or they throw a perspective at you, or they throw words at you, you just let it in one ear and you let it out the other ear. You don't let it carry any weight. You don't let it stick. So that is one of the things that I've cultivated. And this doesn't necessarily come easy, because as I said earlier, if you don't program your mind will be programmed. And that's why it's so important to consume supporting evidence by either doing things that you say you're going to do, or being around the right people in your inner circle, or consuming the right information. Your average of your five people may not be physical. I might be one of your five people. You may be consuming all of my podcasts, following my Instagram stories, and virtually I'm becoming one of your five people. There may be somebody else. This may be the last podcast you ever listen to of me and go, Brian's a dick, I'm never listening to him again. And you find somebody else out there virtually and they become your five people. That's fine. That works really, really well, because your thoughts become their thoughts. The beauty of listening to my podcast or reading my book or reading Tony Robbins' book or going to Tony Robbins' seminar or listening to Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan is you're consuming their thoughts and ideas, and your thoughts become their thoughts, and the way you see the world and the way they see the world will start to overlap, and you'll have this synchronicity where they change the perspectives on the way that you see things. So because you thought it was this way, they showed you to look at it from another angle, and now you see it in a different light. That's how everything is in life. I grew up thinking that to be happy, and I had the I'll be happy when fallacy, which is the death of I'll be happy now. And I had the thought process that you get up, you do well in school, you get a degree, you get a job, you get married, you have 2.3 kids, and then you retire and you travel the world and then you die. That was my thought process of what you did in life, and this is how life should be. And my version of success was nice car, nice clothes, nice attractive partner, people being envious of what I have. These are ridiculous stories I told myself, and you are your story. These are what I thought happiness was, even at a subconscious level. I thought having the nice car, having the nice house, having an attractive partner, and having people look up to me, that's the thing that would make me successful. And the irony of it is when you start achieving those things, and I had to learn it the hard way, when I was able to make the money, I was able to buy the new car, buy the new house, and I'm like, I still feel the fucking same. I was like, I don't feel any different. I actually feel worse now, because I thought these things were going to make me happy when I got them. And you, by all means, you get that dopamine hit, and for the first week, 3 weeks of driving a new car, it feels amazing driving around. You get that new clothes, that new house, and then you get this hedonic adaptation. It's where we adapt to things above that and go back to our normal baseline. It shows the scientific studies of people who win the lottery are ecstatic for the first 3 months, and then after 6 months they go back and they're at the same happiness level they always were. That's hedonic adaptation. It's one of the reasons that we see the sunset and we don't take it for granted nearly every day that the sun comes up, because it happens every day. Whereas if that only happened once every 20 years or when we see a solar eclipse, it's not a hedonic adaptation. We're not adapted to it. And this is a psychological thought process of that we take for granted the things that we become accustomed to and we get used to. And I learned it the hard way. And one of the reasons that I'm so animated on it, and one of the reasons I spoke about it in the mindset section of my book, is that these things don't make you happy. They don't make you feel any better. All they do is plaster over an insecurity and give you that dopamine hit and make you feel better for that brief moment in time. But it doesn't change anything. It doesn't underline and doesn't fix the source of whatever it is that's causing you unhappiness or causing your insecurity. For me, it was massive projected insecurity. I was so insecure with the way I looked. I was so insecure with the way I was. I was always worrying what people thought about me. I was always comparing myself to other people and not wondering why I didn't have what they had, not realizing that it all came from within me. And when you do that complete reframe of mindset and realize that nothing external that can be taken away from you is going to make you happy, it needs to come from within you. You need to figure out those demons. You need to figure out why you're insecure. You need to figure out why you're self-conscious. You need to figure out why you don't have confidence, because all of these things, they're in your control. It's fixing those. It's not buying the handbag. It's not buying the new car. It's not spending the money and going on a shopping spree and getting that dopamine hit. It's not all of these external things that can be taken away in a blink of an eye and putting our happiness into those, because those things can be taken away. And generally when they are, you feel significantly worse. And one of the things that has really helped me is the practicing of something called negative visualization. I'm in the process of researching my second book. The working title right now is going to be The Life Mindset. It's going to be a follow-up to the mindset section of The Fitness Mindset. I'm only researching it now. But one of the things that I'm considering writing about is what I do on a daily basis. It's called negative visualization. It's a old Stoic principle of when you find yourself comparing yourself to other people or wanting more in terms of physical things, you pull it back and you think about the things that you do have, the three or four things that you are amazingly grateful right now, and you picture them being taken away. So what I do, and this is going to sound so psychotic, but I'll share it on the podcast. I don't filter anything, and apologies in advance if I lose people on this, but I picture something happening to my mom. I picture my mom in a coma. I picture my daughter in a car crash. These are things that I practice when I feel that I'm being a little bit of a dick in terms of I want that new thing or I want that shiny object. I start going, okay, or I start stressing about something ridiculous going on in my life. So I'm like, oh, I need to hit this target on the quarterly income or whatever it is. These fucking stupid things that are manifested in your own mind that are vanity metrics. And I start thinking about the things that are important, valuing the valuables. And I think about my mom in a coma. I think about my daughter in a car crash. I'm like, if that happened, everything else wouldn't make a bit of fucking difference right now. I was like, I wouldn't give a shit what amount of money was in my bank account. I wouldn't care what supplements I had in my cupboard. I wouldn't care what my training program was like. I would just want my mom to be better. I would just want my daughter to be okay. And I practice that negative visualization, because every time you think that you need something else to make you happy, you kind of forget about the things that you have right now that make you feel so grateful that you have those things in your life. And for you, it may not be a physical person. For me, they're the valuables in my life. Value the valuables. And they're the valuables in my life. They're the two things that if you hear me deleting my Instagram or no podcasts or dropping off the face of the earth, you know something has happened to my mom or my daughter. Otherwise, nothing stops me. And that is the thought process that supports me every day when I'm feeling a bit stupid about extra things that I want, things that shiny object syndrome. It allows you to cultivate gratitude and be so grateful for the things that you truly do have. And that's something that I do. There's times when I catch it during the day or I'll do it at nighttime, and to the point that you're nearly at tears picturing it and you're nearly living in that reality. And then when you come back, I find I have a stronger relationship with my mum because of it. I'm able to be more present and show up better at my daughter because you're not taking those things for granted. You're not assuming that they're going to be around forever because you don't fucking know. Something could happen tomorrow. Something could happen today. You don't know. Nothing is guaranteed. And when you stop living life like it's going to go on forever and you stop taking the things for granted that you're going to have them forever, it allows you to be more grateful for the things that you do have. And that negative visualization practice is something that has supported me so much as somebody that has that type A personality that goes from one thing to the next and one thing to the next and then on to the next thing and never stops and fully be grateful and present for the things that you truly do have. That's something that has supported me. So just as a side note, I wanted to add that just in the case that it does help and land with anybody listening. So who's your five people is number one. Who are the people that charge your energy? Who are the people that drain your energy? Who are the emotional vampires? Who are the people you need to cut? The people that you can't cut, who do you need to give words less weight to? And the next thing is a way of seeing it, and one of the reasons that I love podcasts, one of the reasons that I love audiobooks and reading, is when you're delving into the mind of an author or the person presenting a podcast or hosting a podcast, you're delving into their minds and seeing the way that they see the world. And one of the things that has really supported me, and I got this from Jay Shetty, who was on a podcast, the Impact Theory podcast, which was a really good episode that I enjoyed. And he spoke about that hurt people hurt people. And it's worth asking anytime somebody's being negative around you, either pulling you down or throwing a backhanded compliment, are they projecting their own insecurity or the way that they're feeling onto you? And this has been one of the biggest things that I've had to catch over the years because of the way that I used to project my own insecurity onto other people. And again, this is a character trait that I'm not proud of, particularly one that I've largely been able to rub out or work out of my as a character flaw, was when I would see people at 23, 24 that were doing better than me, I would always try and knock them down in terms of I never was a keyboard warrior. I never projected it in a verbal way and be like, oh, who do you think you are? But I definitely knocked them in my own head. I would look at them and go, why do fucking people follow them? Or who do they think they are? Or they think they're so smart. I would tell myself all these stories that were just projected insecurities. And instead of looking at them like, oh my God, their success, they're showing that you can live life this way and be successful, I should take what they're doing or take the best parts of what they're doing and try and apply it in my own life, which is what I do now. I haven't looked at anybody in the last 3 years that is quote unquote doing better than me. Again, success is subjective. And this is why it's very important when you know what success means for you and you value the things that are valuable for you, you never actually look at somebody else and think, well, they've got more followers or they've got more money or they've got a better abs or they've got a bigger chest or they've got a bigger bum or whatever it is, or a better body. You don't look at it that way because that's not your success metric. So when you have different success metrics, you don't see people and you compare yourself to them directly. When you're vanity metrics, and I say vanity metrics because your boob size is a vanity metric. Your followers on Instagram is a vanity metric. Your bank account is a vanity metric. When you're chasing things like numbers, you're never going to be happy because numbers never end. There's always a bigger dick. This is the there's always somebody better than you. There's always somebody smarter than you. There's always somebody leaner than you. There's always a bigger dick. This is one of the life philosophies, and I use that phrase because it's the one that normally stands and lands with people, and particularly guys, but girls tend to use it too. I've heard it commented back to me. There's always somebody better than you. Always. When your vanity metrics and your success barrier are set to those metrics, it's very, very difficult to hit those because there's always going to be someone bigger than you. There's always going to be someone leaner than you. There's always going to be someone prettier than you. There's always going to be someone smarter than you. Always. For the end of time. That's the way life works. But when you value things that are in your control and you value the things that are truly important to you, that if you did that negative visualization and you would truly be unhappy for a certain period of time, or you would truly be sad for a certain period of time if they were taken away, they're the things that you should use as your success metrics. What I would offer on this side of projection is, as somebody that I worked a lot on this character flaw, that when I would see somebody that was doing better than me, I would instantly, one, compare myself to them, and one of two things would happen. I would either completely suppress it myself and it would make me feel terrible about myself, and I would feel that mild state of depression where I'm like, I can't do anything, I'll never be there. That's one way it would hit me. Another way it would hit me was in an actual projection where I'm like, fuck that person. I'm like, who do they think they are? Again, just another way of dealing with it. And then the third way was just expressing it in some other way, shape or form where I would convince myself that, oh, you know, they're probably not happy anyway, or they, you know, they're probably really unhappy in their relationship. I don't care if they've got an amazing body. You know, they probably have no money. I would make up all these stories that were ridiculous, but they made me feel better. And they're the old, one of the things that I love so much about ancient writings and ancient stories, and I love the Ace of Fable of the Fox and the Sour Grapes. And the Fox and the Sour Grapes, for anyone that's not familiar with it, is there's a fox walking down a valley and he sees these grapes in a tree and he looks at them and they look delicious and they look really tasty and he goes, I'm going to have those grapes. And he jumps and he reaches and he jumps and he reaches and he jumps and he reaches and he can't get them. And then he walks away and goes, oh, those grapes are probably sour anyway. That's the equivalent of just making yourself feel better and telling yourself a story. And this is why I get so big on don't be letting fear be disguised as practicality. And we can go through our entire life where we let decisions that we make be disguised as, well, it's not practical to quit my job right now, or it's not practical to leave this relationship I've been in for years, or it's not practical to start working out now. That's all fear. Because you're hiding behind that fear of the person you want to become and you're disguising it as practicality. It's the story you've told yourself. It's the fox and the sour grapes. And something that I would do was I would basically just make up these stories and I would make fear disguised as practicality. I would use supporting reference points of people who told me that I couldn't, and I'd say they were right. When I wanted to, the one I always come back to is when I wanted to leave teaching to go into fitness. That was my big jump. It was the first time I went against the grain of the people that told me that I should live my life a certain way. And I made that jump. And for years, I used the sour grapes of, I won't be happy in fitness. I was like, oh, nobody makes money in fitness. Nobody's happy when they do something like that. You know, if they're working a job that, you know, their passion, if you love working out, you're going to hate working with people in the gym, and then you'll lose the love for training and you'll lose the love for the gym. These were stories I told myself. These are some of the ridiculous and ludicrous stories that I told myself that were fear disguised as practicality. And when you realize that any time you ever project that onto somebody else or you suppress it and it makes you feel bad, if somebody is coming at you with negative words or a negative emotion or aiming any negativity in your direction, hurt people hurt people. They're normally projecting what's going on in their life onto you. And one of the things, and I'm using a lot of the reference from the mindset section of my book, because this was a whole topic on how to deal when people tell you you can't do something, how to deal with negativity, how to deal with hate. These are all topics in that mindset section. And one of the reasons that I'm so big on understanding that you need to disconnect the way people behave towards you from who people truly are, because most people are good and most people have goodness in them and they have beauty in them. It's just that we don't all see it because it's coated in this negative emotion that they're so unhappy at home, or they hate their job, and then it surrounds them and clouds them in this negativity, and they project it onto you. And you need to realize that anybody that aims negativity in your direction, it's not on you. They're not aiming it at you. And a lot of the time, they're speaking to themselves. There's times when I would have conversations with my dad where I'm like, you're talking to your fucking self. When he would tell me that you can't do something, you need to be able to support your family and, you know, have a 9-to-5 job and a steady income. I make more money now than I've ever made. I have more money now than I've ever made. And it's not a vanity metric for me anymore, because it was one of those things that I thought for a long period of time, having X amount in my bank account would make me happy. Then I got X amount in my bank account. And then I was stupid enough to go, oh no, I'll be happy when I have Y amount in my bank account. Then I got Y amount. I'm like, I feel the fucking same. And you'll find that when you're chatting to people, they're talking to themselves. And how many times will you, once I say this now, it'll bring it to the forefront of your mind and you'll witness it and you'll see it. Either in conversations with you or when you overhear third-party conversations. When somebody goes, no, no, you can't do that. No, no, what they're saying is they can't do that. And they want it to be projected onto you. People generally talk to themselves. Every time I've told somebody I'm going to do something, and Marathon des Sables is a great example. When I did Marathon des Sables, the 256-kilometer self-sufficient race through the Sahara Desert, coming from my background as a bodybuilder, as a GEA player, as a fitness model, I had people tell me, you can't do that, you don't run. And I'm like, no, no, you're talking to yourself. You can't do that because you don't run. I'll fucking learn how. And that's one of the things that you start to catch with people. And now that I've said it, the next time somebody tells you that you can't do something or you shouldn't do something, just catch it in your own mind and go, are they talking to themselves or are they really talking to you? Sometimes it's coming from love, and if it's an inner circle of people, it'll be coming from a loving place, and you need to be careful of that as well. You'll have people that are really close to you that tell you shouldn't do something, they'll tell you can't do something, and it's coming from a place of love, and that can be as dangerous as anything else, because they're worried about you and they don't want you to go off the traditional path because they want you to succeed and they're fearful for you. But again, it's normally projecting their own way of seeing the world onto you. So when somebody, even when it's coming from an amazing place and it's your husband or your wife or your brother or your sister, and they're like, oh, maybe you should not do that, be very aware that they're speaking to themselves, that they don't think they can do it. But you, by doing these things that you say that you're going to do, you let people, by shining your light, you let people, you give them permission to shine their light. When you do the things that you say you're going to do, and this is relative, this is dropping 3 dress sizes, this is getting abs, this is getting a new job, this is getting into a relationship where you're happy, this is being a better mother or father, whatever it is that is slightly scaring you, that you're like, that's what I need to do, when you're not disguising fear as practicality, and other people around you are telling you that you can't or shouldn't do it, either from a place of love or a place of projected hate, it doesn't matter. When you do those things, you give people permission to do the same. Probably one of the reasons that you may resonate with me, and again, I may be speaking out of turn because maybe my words don't land with you, but if they do, maybe one of the reasons that I resonate with you is that my light is shining in a way that I don't let other people's opinions dictate the direction of my life. I make decisions based off my internal compass, what's best for my life to help me serve people as best I can, to help me be a better father, to be a better son, to be a better person. You're probably the same. If my words are landing and resonating with you, there's greatness in you. There's light in you and it's shining and you just don't know exactly how to channel it now. Or maybe you do and you're just looking for permission to do it. And sometimes that's what we do as people. When you do that, you give your inner circle and your family and your friends and the people in your surroundings permission to do the same. So don't ever forget the power that you have by doing your thing. And even though you're going to have negative people telling you you can't do it, you're going to have people telling you you shouldn't do it, if you know your internal compass is pointing in a certain direction, in whatever channel of life that it is that you're trying to achieve or whatever it is you're trying to achieve right now, you're giving people permission to do the same. And anything that has been done can be done. You know, once you see one, you can be one. And the last thing that I want to end this episode on dealing with negative people, and this is one that's quite fresh, so I'm not even sure what words are going to come out of my mouth right now. But you have to ask yourself, when you see negativity in somebody else, and this one's a little bit of a side note for if you're that negative person and you find that you're projecting some of your own insecurities onto somebody else, you have to ask yourself, are they a mirror? And This is a little bit sidetracked off how to deal with negative people, and hopefully the practical tips earlier will help. But there's another angle from this, that if you're finding that that negativity is coming from within you, and sometimes it's as easy as cutting the negative people around you, and you find that nearly instantly, it's as if somebody took a cloud from over your head and removed it. If you're finding there's still negativity coming up within you, and you're following someone on social media, or you're watching somebody's content, or you're seeing somebody in your workplace that's annoying you, you have to ask yourself, are they a mirror of a personality aspect or a personality part of you that you don't like within yourself? And one of the things that I've had to work on over the last probably 18 months, even 24 months, was one of the reasons that negative people don't bother me anymore is it's nearly visceral when I see somebody, because I don't have any negative people in my immediate circle. When I walk into a room and somebody's being negative, it's nearly visceral. It's as if somebody is metaphorically punching me in the face with their negativity. And that's very easy. There's an old story about when you put a frog into boiling water, it will jump straight out. But if you put a frog into lukewarm water and then gradually turn up the heat to boiling, it'll die there. That's what negative people are like. It's the lying down with dogs and getting fleas and then not noticing you have fleas. It's the when you are not around negative people and you walk into a room and people are being negative either towards you or somebody else, it's like that frog jumping out of the water. You spot it instantly. But if you're in that circle of people consistently, you don't even notice that that's the way you're becoming as well. So it's a very important thing to catch. So asking, is that negativity within you? And then asking, if there are people that are bothering you, are they mirroring back a part of you that you don't like about yourself? And one of the reasons that negative people don't actually bother me that much anymore, in the sense that there was a time when somebody being negative to me would keep me up at night, you know, or if somebody took criticism at me, I had on the wall of my room for my first 2 years in business a quote that said, the only taste of success some people get is when they take a bite out of you. And that was my way of dealing with criticism that was aimed in my direction. That doesn't bother me anymore, because that's not within me in order to see it. One thing that has bothered me and still does is a personality type from somebody who's a know-it-all. And a know-it-all that is projected insecurity manifested in know-it-all overconfidence. And this is something that I've had to work on myself, and I'm going to give a recent example just so people realize that there's no end game. You're consistently a work in progress. And one of the things that used to bother me, and still does, I'm not going to lie, I still have to catch it, when I see some young kid that's 22, 23, 24, and is spewing hate for some comment on, no, well, this is the way you do a lateral pull down, or this is the way you do a vegan diet, or this is the way you do a CrossFit 50, or whatever it is. And they're coming across like an overconfident know-it-all. And for me, it's a personality trait of a younger me that I don't like within myself, or didn't like within myself, because I was so insecure in my early 20s. And you would never have known it, because it was so highly projected as an overconfidence know-it-all. But I was so insecure in myself. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I didn't know anything about myself. I didn't know what made me happy. And it was manifested into a complete overconfidence know-it-all. I would tell people, no, this is the way you should live your life. This is what you need to do. And my way is right. And if you go back and even look at my content from 4 years ago, you'll see some of those characteristics of, this is the way you do it, and if you don't do it this way, then you're wrong or you're stupid. Again, it was my own insecurity projected on and manifested in a way that made me seem like I was overconfident and super secure in myself. And one of the reasons that I've had to work on was, I was, for most of my life, I was really, really badly dyspraxic in school. My handwriting was terrible. I was called stupid by teachers. I was called stupid by people in my family. I didn't read a lot of books, so people used to call me an idiot. Lots of different things. I have my own insecurities on intelligence and knowledge, which is ironic, because intelligence and smarts is so individual to each person. I love the Einstein quote that if you judge a fish's ability to climb a tree, it'll go through its whole life thinking it's stupid. And that's how I felt for a large part of my life. I let other people's opinions on intelligence and knowledge, realizing that there is certain types of tradition and intelligence. Yes, there's book smarts and there's reading a lot and being able to regurgitate information. That's one form of intelligence. There's kinesthetic intelligence. There's people that are amazing at sports that have never read a book in their life. That's intelligence. That's knowledge. It's just in a different area. And we let societies... dictation of this is the way people are smart. If you read a load of books and you have 7 degrees, you're smart, you're intelligent. And we put that label on it and then we let that become reality. That's not intelligence, that's not reality. And that was something that I struggled with a lot myself. On top of, you know, I would rechannel it then into body image. Then I'm like, okay, well, if I'm bigger than the other guy, it'll be fine. Or if I'm leaner than the other guy, it'll be fine. And then I'll feel secure in myself. I don't need to be the smartest guy in the room. And that's where my there's always a bigger dick philosophy came from. There's always someone smarter. There's always somebody bigger. There's always somebody leaner or skinnier. Always. That's the way life is. And one of the things that I've had to work on myself, and I still continue to do this, it's like sweeping the floor. You can sweep the floor today in your kitchen and it'll be clean. But if you leave it for a week or a month, it'll go back to being dirty. And that's what personal development is like in terms of working out and ironing out your weaker characteristics and personality traits. That's the one that I've struggled with, is that projected mirror. When I see a know-it-all kid who's projecting everything that they know about the world, I'm like, you haven't fucking lived, mate. And then I realize I'm talking to myself, because that's exactly what I was like. So the last thing that I'll leave you on is one that's probably a little bit of food for thought, and is definitely worth one that you probably need to chew on if it landed in any way. That if you've done all the other things and you've identified the 5 people in your circle, you've given less weight to the words that they have if you can't cut them physically or negatively. You know who the energy drainers are. You know who the energy chargers are. You know that hurt people hurt people, and largely it's a projection of their own insecurities onto you. The last thing is, if that negativity is still within you, you have to ask, are they a mirror? Is that person that's bothering you, and the reason that Sally pisses you off so much, or the reason that John does your head in, is there something within them that you don't like about yourself? Because in a lot of cases, it's normally a mirror back. And as soon as you identify that and start working on that personality trait, that person doesn't seem to bother you anymore. So that's just the last thing that I'll leave this episode on. And hopefully, again, this was a real... just press record and talk. No pre-planning, no anything for this one. So hopefully it helped. I know it's something that a lot of people have to deal with in their own life, whatever way it shows up, in terms of whether it's somebody in your immediate circle or just dealing with the world in general. But the final thing that I'm going to leave you with is, do not go through your entire life letting fear be disguised as practicality and letting other people's opinion become your reality. And dealing with negative people is sometimes as simple as being around the right people and understanding that you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And if you need to be around more positive people, then that's what you do. When you take ownership of something, when you own it, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. If you're not around those people right now, that's fine. Own it. Own that you've been this way up to this point. Own that you've chosen to see the world in a certain way up to this point. Own that you've let people's opinions of you up to this point, up until now, dictate the direction of your life. Own that, because when you own it, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. So I'll leave today's episode on that. And again, hit me up on DM. I'm not sure. These are always throw against the wall and see if it sticks episodes. I never know if they provide a lot of value, if they get lost in the esoteric. I never know on these ones. So be sure to hit me up on DM on Instagram. Let me know what you thought. Also, last thing I'll ask is, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. That is something that I check out and read, and I base a lot of the feedback from either DMs or the reviews on iTunes on what people like, whether they like these topics, the Q&As, the guests, etc. So please do that as well. So a massive thank you for listening, and I'll catch you all next week.